It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello and welcome to Monday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host, Anthony Anderson. I'm joined by two razor-sharp minds from the world of Scottish football. My good pals, I've got Craig Anderson.
How are we doing?
And Mr. Craig Fowler. How are we doing, lads? All good?
Currently looking around for the razor-sharp mind that's in the same room as me. Can't spot them, Tony.
Well, Alec, we have to pass it all off that we know what we're talking about, and then people... It's all a bit espionage. Make people think we know what we're talking about, and then they listen. But we are here to talk about the Scotland national team after they opened up their Euro qualifying campaign with a 3-0 victory against Cyprus. I'm going to come in and say, it was a very boring time trying to watch that in the pub, just to be clear. But I do want to say I'm not really using that too much as a criticism. It had a very England qualifying campaign feel to it, where there was never really remotely any danger that wasn't going to happen. And maybe that's quite good for a Scotland team. Is that fair to say, Craig Anderson?
Well, yeah, I think the first thing to say is 2006 was the last time we won our first qualifier in a group, which is, I don't mean obviously the fixture list and stuff like that, but that's wild in itself. And it shows what we're kind of pointing at, because we've had games, like, I'm sure we were at home to Lithuania was one of the groups, I'm sure,
and yeah,
we've had
home to
Georgia potentially as well. Games like that where you're like, well, yes, we should be winning these games. I was at the game on Saturday, and it was definitely not vintage Scotland, but you're kind of right. I mean, I was a wee bit worried in the sense that we were dropping a bit deeper and deeper, and they did look like they had like a shit jammy goal in them, but that was just like from watching them rather than they didn't actually do anything that would got close to meriting it. I think they had like a long range effort that Gunn saved quite easily. So yeah, it was very much a professional job, and obviously having watched a lot of Steve Clarke teams, you get a wee bit used to that. Like, they're not a team that goes for the jugular very often, unless the other team are just like hopelessly incompetent. And Cyprus made it hard in the sense that even when we went to 1-0, it took them in probably till about 70, 75 minutes to even try and come out. Even at 1-0, they were still, back five, two sitting in front of that, and really just saying, okay, come and play. And that does not play to our strengths very much anyway. We're a more disruptive team than we are a creative team. And so if another team's just saying, oh, okay, beat us, I think that's always where we're going to have a challenge.
Fowler, let's go right back to the very beginning then, when the teams came out. So there was a chat about back four, back three, which just really seems to be the chat about every time a Scotland team takes the field under Steve Clarke. But we'd had our first sort of real bit of evidence about the back four in the last sort of triple header that went very well. But Tierney was back. Were you surprised to see it go back to back three, or did you think there was just absolutely no doubt due to the fact that those two guys are fit again?
Managers it seems over recent years, managers that I've, in my kind of professional and fan capacity, managers that I know a lot about who like the three at the back, seem to really like three at the back, and use whatever excuse to go back to it. So I'm thinking Robbie Nielsen in charge of Hearts. I'm thinking Callum Davidson, who's never really gone away from a back three in charge of St Johnstone, and Steve Clarke at Scotland. And it really seems to take something to kind of move away from it. But I didn't actually have a problem in this instance. I assumed it was going to be the system we were going to be playing against Spain. I think against Cyprus, it's maybe a little bit of overkill. But then you do have two kind of wide centre-halves in Ryan Portress and Kieran Tierney. Portress is somebody who does it more with his pass, and Tierney can do it with his legs. In terms of progressing plays, then you
how
can talk
do you
about-
pass without your legs?
Sorry, I meant Tierney can dribble more. Ryan Portress, Ryan Portress is such a good passer that he just does it with his mind.
Okay.
It's like the fake like force. Yeah,
right. Hey, fella, we all know how much you love Ryan Portress, so I'm not surprised to hear you referring to him as an X-Man. So we're there.
So, there is something to be said that maybe it isn't as negative as some people would like to say that, yeah, why are you playing three at the back against a team like Cyprus who, you know, every time they kind of ventured beyond halfway, it was just basically like one guy going up against three defenders, and usually it was just Grant Hanley going, sorry, pal, I'll just be taking that football again off you. So there was kind of that side of it where maybe could have played the four, but I'm going to guess we're going to play the three against Spain. That's the system that Clark usually likes to play. As you said, Tierney and Robertson were both playing, and that's been something that Scotland fans have levied as a criticism at Clark for the three at the back, is using it when one of them isn't available.
Yeah.
Because that was the whole kind of point in creating the formation in the first place, was to fit two of our best players into the team. But they are both playing. Like I say, you played Cyprus, maybe not needed. And we'll get on to talk about the midfield too as well, I think.
Yeah,
maybe,
that's next up, don't worry.
So maybe not needed in this game, but this is the first time that Scotland have played together in 5 months, I think, 4 or 5 months. First competitive game for 6 months. So you're really wanting to have that continuity going from one game into the next, because I imagine they would have done some sort of training on Sunday, but it wouldn't mean too much because they've just played a game the day before. They're training today. They're not going to train tomorrow because the game's tomorrow night. So you're really limited in the amount of time you've got to set the players up in the system they want. And if you use the first week of training to go through, you know, we're actually going to play a 4-5-1 or whatever, or 4-4-2 or whatever you want to think, and then you go into the Spain game and then you change it up, you're really leaving yourself very little time. We could talk about later on whether we're maybe better playing a different formation against Spain, but because that's a formation Clark has tended to use, and especially used in the kind of bigger, more difficult games, then it will be, I think it'd be very likely he uses that. So therefore, picking a team against Cyprus that was maybe a little bit on the negative side, yeah, it wasn't great to watch, but you can understand the reasons.
Yeah, so you think that he was so certain about victory in this game that he basically used it as a dress rehearsal for the Spain game and just got set up in that way regardless, to give them the space and the time to get back to grips with what he wanted to do?
I wouldn't say certain of victory, but I would say he still had more than enough.
Privately, obviously, like privately.
More than enough confidence that this team could still get it done.
And with that, Craig Anderson, sorry, we're all Craigs here. Would you say that's maybe the reason why Jack and McGregor were played together in front of a back three? I mean, it does. I like Ryan Jack. I mean, Twitter's been awash with Ryan Jack slander today from what I've seen.
I don't get it.
I never have. But firstly, you were there. But were these magical boos that I heard about on Twitter, did they happen?
So what I should say is I arrived at Hampden about 1 o'clock, and I thought it's a bit too early, so I went down to Asda, got a bottle of juice and used the toilet before I went to the game. And then I arrived back at Hampden at 1:45, and I got into my seat at 10 minutes past two. So so I didn't hear anything like that before the game. I heard a couple of people saying they heard it. It didn't sound like it was some massive loud thing. So there wasn't it wasn't this. And what I would say is... Nathan Patterson got an enormous round of applause for coming on. Like, he was very much a popular player, which is one who's had that kind of same thing leveled at him before. So I don't know. But in terms of Jack, like, I just think him and McGregor in general are very good together. They're a very good partnership. And the only reason we went away from that at all was because Jack got injured. They missed the Euros. And then Gilmore at that point had pinned down a place. I'm a big Scott McTominay fan, but I don't think he works well in a midfield too. I just don't. And so you're always in that situation of kind of who else are you going to play? And I think, and I know some people said, you know, you're just playing Cyprus, but you need someone that's just going to win the ball back in any game of football. And I think, yeah, there's a...
That's how you keep pressure up constantly. That's how you suffocate teams, isn't it, really?
And in hindsight, yeah, watching the game, we needed to move the ball faster, and I think Jack wasn't effective on the ball. So you could kind of in hindsight say, yeah, maybe we didn't need him. But I think there is that whole thing settling in. Just with the back three, even, I think, if I remember correctly, the last six games that we played with Robertson and Tierney in the back three were six wins at the competitive games at the end of the last qualifying campaign. And the only game I think we've lost with the two of them in the back three was the Croatia game at Hampden in the Euros. It is a formation that gets the best out of those two players, and I think you saw some of that. So I think you need the two, when it works effectively, you need the two sitting players in front so that three or four of your defenders can go forward at the same time. So
yeah, that's a really, really good point, because with Hickey there, and obviously with the emergence of Ryan Porteous and Tierney and Robertson, they are like some of our main attacking players, aren't they?
It's a very weird, like, yeah, you've almost got Grant Hanley and then McGregor and Jack sit in front of them so the other four can go past them. Yeah. Like, Porteous didn't do it a lot, but you can see in Porteous, I think you're getting the centre half, the reason McTominay was playing there, the same sort of attributes, the reason Jack Hendry might have played there is that they play with their head up, they bring the ball out and they try and distribute from the back and they try to be clever with the ball. Tierney's about directness, but that's your kind of cerebral centre-back. And I know that's a strange thing to say about Ryan Porteous of all people, but as a footballer, the way he plays the game, yeah, there's still the mistakes and the slips in him and the errors, but it suits him very nicely, that role. And so, yeah, I didn't necessarily have a problem. I thought for the game, he wasn't fit, so he was never going to play. I thought for that game, Patterson's a better option for directness on the flank, whereas I think the Spain game's more suited to Hickey in the sense of him coming in field and being
the ball better. Yeah,
but he just wouldn't beat his man down the side, whereas Patterson immediately, and yes, the game had changed by that point and there was space and all the rest of it, Patterson two or three times burst straight into that gap down the side. So I think there's that discussion to be had. I am very much starting to convince myself we're going to have the exact same right-hand side problem that we currently have on the left, because those two are excellent players, and we are going to have this question of, well, can you really leave either of them on the bench when they're both fit?
So is Aaron Hickey going to become the right centre back in this scenario?
This is
how we get the full backs in.
This is going to sound like a terrible comparison, but I think people see where I'm coming from. Aaron Hickey really reminds me of David Witherspoon, in that he's a footballer first and foremost, and so teams were just like, where can we get him on the park? Mm-hmm. So like when he was at Hibs, they were just putting him at fullback and stuff. But when I watch him play, I don't even see a fullback. I see like if he was Italian, I feel like he'd be playing in central midfield. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I know that's a very weird thing to say, given he played in the Italian league and didn't play there. But, but like I watched a lot of his games at Bologna, and he spent half the game in the opposing half as a left back. And you're seeing the same for Brentford. He kind of is a central midfielder half the time in the way he plays. And it didn't suit that game so well for me. I don't think he played badly.
You were looking for aggression to get out on the outside and to commit people.
So I think we've got all these parts, and I think you're right, Craig, about Scotland not having played for a while. That's part of it's just bedding these guys in, and some of them hadn't played a lot of football of late. Hickey being one of them. He's just back from injury. So there might have been an element of just kind of getting something together for Spain.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, I like, I mean, that's a good point you're saying about Hickey, because Hickey's like, he might have a massive career, even, I mean, he's doing already. I mean, there's you feel there's going to be more moves in Hickey's career as well. Like, if he's already at the level of Brentford, who are a top half English Premier League team. And like you're saying, his style of play, this inverted fullback style, is like really, really in vogue. In the latest thing. So you think that maybe Hickey is like really well placed. It's like him being a player now is the perfect time for him to be a player. You know, people you say, oh, they would have been better if they played in the 90s and stuff like that. Hickey might, it's the absolute right place, right time for him to sort of maximise his talent.
He's 20 years old. Like, he's still like, you know, he feels like he's been around for ages because he has been, but there's a lot to develop in his game as well.
But with Jack and McGregor, we were able to absolutely control the game. As I said, I never felt, I was in the pub and the worst thing that was being levelled at the television was just how everyone was getting bored. And like, because I was in Robbie's, which is a Pibs pub, just talking about playing Motherwell at home. let's get back to that. But that is, and I'd say that I don't really mean that too much as a criticism. I do feel like it was just like totally easily done. We didn't really have to exert ourselves. And with the way Clark used his subs is where they had a massive impact on the result and how we played. And I know that can be used as a criticism about, well, maybe why didn't he just start with that? But I always think that's a really simplistic way to look at it. The way he lined it up and the way we used it sort of maximised everyone's talents and ability during that game. I don't know, is that unfair, Fowler, or...?
I was just kind of thinking there in terms of the criticism that does get levied at managers, and you know, when they make subs and they're the right subs, and it's like, well, why didn't you start with that? So it's too simplistic, first of all, because you're seeing different things in the game that you might not have saw beforehand. Like Clark, like we actually started off the game against Cyprus with really quite a high tempo, I thought.
Yeah, the first 20 minutes were like, oh, this is all right. The goals are going to be coming here, aye.
And I think the players probably fed off the fact that the crowd wasn't really into it much either. You know, it wasn't exactly a raucous Hamden. Like, and I know that the performance is part of that, but even in the first half, when they were well on top and early going, there was a bit of, you know, a bit of atmosphere the first 5-10 minutes, and then it kind of died a bit of a death and then scored. It never really kind of sustained itself after that. And I think the players kind of bought that. So Clark maybe wouldn't have seen the lack of urgency in the side and the lack of energy. But then he made the subs that were perfect for that. And he also made a formation change as well. He went away from the 3-4-3 and changed it to a kind of more standard 3-5-2 with a kind of midfield three. And that put McTominay on the right of that. And that meant he could kind of bomb forward and do the job that he struggles to do, as Craig says, in a two-man midfield. Because that's why it's probably one of the reasons why I've never really been too sold on McTominay in a Scotland shirt, is that he does struggle when he starts in the centre of the park. He doesn't play up to his pedigree. And obviously, we know he struggles at centre-half where he can do the job of stepping out, and he's an asset there with the ball at his feet, but defensively, he's maybe not that great. But anyway, can I get back? I'm kind of leaving myself down a tangent here. Get back to talking about the substitutes. With the five subs rule in football now, I think managers can go into games now with more of a mindset of, right, these are the guys I'm going to use to change the game. These are the guys I'm going to use to implement it, because you can change half your team. Like, if you take out the goalkeeper, which you're never going to change unless it's an injury, you can literally change half your team. So why not go into a match with thinking, right, these guys will keep it, you know, we'll keep possession. You know, Jack and McGregor are going to mean that Cyprus are going to find it very hard to ever get the ball off us. And play with the back three, and, if, you know, play with Adams up front instead of Dykes. Leave Christie on the bench in case we need him. And then if we need him, we can bring them on. Because we can make these three changes, and then if anything else goes wrong or someone gets injured, like what happened with, well, I don't know if Hickey was injured, they kind of speculated that he was on the broadcast, I'm not sure if it was, if it was just a change. Then if something else happens, you could then bring on, you've got an extra two substitutes you make, as long as you don't, you know, make the three subs one by one and use up all your allotted time. So it's an interesting one to kind of say that about managers these days, because football is evolving and changing. I'd like it not to, I'd really like to see the three subs return at least at the Scottish Premiership level, where you're just helping out the bigger teams more than you normally would.
You know, and then you're also taking away all these comfort blankets that you've literally and given teams, managers, the ability to take risks. Like, obviously, there's not, like you're saying, there isn't as much risk for the manager. Like you're saying there, I'm going to have a controlled team, and then we're going to basically just wear the opposition out, who are weaker than us, with our sort of possession-based players who are also good at winning the ball back. And then by the time they get tired, I'll bring on all our sort of really quick legs, aggressive players on the front foot, guys like Dykes who just run about and batter you as well. Like that second goal, it was the three players, it was all about like them at their absolute best, what they do, their attributes, for everyone to see Christie sort of closing it down. And then being strong, quick enough to get on top of it and then get to the byline, putting a really good cross. Dykes doing that thing which he really, really is good at, making something out of something really awkward. I always think he does that really, really well. And it's like a really brilliant header. And like you're talking about Craig Anderson as well. McTominay likes to do that. Even when he's at Man United at his best, he that's the kind of thing you see him doing. But it's like at club level and international level, I feel like he almost gets neutered because he has other talents as well. I mean, it's a little bit of maybe like what happens. You see, it's the opposite of what happens maybe for John McGinn. I mean, he has that there, but in the national team, he gets totally let loose to do that. And so it's still exciting, again, that there is sort of horses for courses for us, and we've got a deep enough squad to do that. And Clark was able to do it because eventually we still done it. We still got three goals, even if they didn't make loads and loads of really clear-cut chances.
And it's that, you talk about the substitutes, like, it's a thing that used to happen to us, where they'd have been sitting thinking, oh, we've kept this to 1-0, and then they look and three of the four substitutes we bring on are Premier League players in England, yeah. And it's a Man United player that comes on, and do you know what I mean? And it's a guy he's not a first choice at Man United, but he's a very much a first team player at Man United. And it's that kind of depth that, to be able to call upon that is very different to what we've had before. And it's you've got guys like Gilmore, Ferguson, Cooper, who are like top flight players, also not getting on the park at all. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you're really looking at us now and going, there is that depth there. And the changes came at the right time in terms of McGinn was not getting involved in the game, so dropping him kind of deeper to the left just kind of gave them something else to think about. And as I said, I thought Christie's energy and Dykes just being Dykes. Like gave them something else to think about. Obviously,
they added so much impetus. Like, Dykes, you can't play boring when Dykes is on the park. It's always so bombastic, so aggressive, and he never doesn't get involved. I mean, it doesn't mean he's always playing well, but he's never just like, You know all the time Lyndon Dykes is on the park.
Yeah, because Shea Adams, I thought the opposite. Like, when he got involved, he was very good, but there wasn't a lot of involvement, mainly because, in fair play to him, it was one of the best performances I've seen from him. Alex Gogic was superb in the middle of the defence.
I was slating him. I'm like, before it on our WhatsApp group, I was like, well, sure, this is a doddle if Gogic is... I'm like, and I'm not a Gogic hater, but I mean, I was like, he's not really good enough to be a Scottish Premiership centre-half.
That was when he played for Hamilton for like about a year and a half or 2 years, where we thought, well, he's quite crap. And then he moved at the centre of the park. You're like, oh, Alex Gogic is actually quite good.
So now and then he's playing in like the middle of the back three, and I was like, so well, he's the main man in this. But then, as you say, like, again, there's maybe an idea of, because they played with two defensive midfielders as well, Cyprus, with a proper back three. And sometimes then Gogic is purely talking about defend. And that maybe suits him because he's protected. It's just sometimes players, they need the team to be absolutely perfectly built around them for you to see what their best attributes.
Talking of players the team is built around, the man who scored the first goal, and he doesn't do very much in a Scotland trip. Like, you barely see him in the game these days. Like, you know how you get, like,
since we moved into that front three. Yeah, I agree. He plays, it's like he's more thinking about, he's basically playing up front. I don't mean that, and his idea is maybe to not get on the ball quite as much, is to be a guy looking off the ball to get in goal scoring positions.
Yeah, and it's incredible. He's now two goals. He's Scotland's seventh all time top goal scorer. But interestingly, he's Scotland goal scoring is now only two short of the number he scored for Hibs, which for the number of games and the amount of time, it's just incredible. And the finishes are really varied, and that was a really well taken one. I know it looks easy, it's a tap in and whatever, but the ball obviously takes a big nick from Robertson's cross, and to have it didn't faze him at all. I thought it was a really nicely worked goal from the three of them. It was Armstrong, I think, puts it through, and I thought Robertson was offside at the time, but he timed it really well, and the ball across, yeah, got the deflection, but it was well placed and well timed, as his assist was for the third goal. But yeah, it's very strange. McGinn oscillates between these games where I'm thinking of Denmark at home. The energy and the amount of involvement he had in that game, playing almost as a kind of orthodox right winger, was a lot. Whereas in a game like that, it felt like he was just hovering about, waiting for the ball to drop most of the time. He didn't really engage with the game very much, but you can afford to do that in a game like that. Whereas I would hope against Spain, he maybe runs about a bit more. Maybe he was saving himself.
Yeah, there'll definitely. I mean, as I say, he's probably our main goal scoring threat. So in a game like against Cyprus, you're looking for him to concentrate on getting in at the back post, making the moves to get in goal scoring positions. Because it's the beauty of having him playing on the right hand side with Robertson on the left. We know, even with the quality of Hickey, like, the majority of our play is going to play down that left hand side. As you say, the whole makeup of the team's based around that left hand side. So it works, and he gets a hell of a lot of goals. And I don't mean it's a criticism. I know Harry Kane's goals for and the teams that are against is taking a lot of has been again on Twitter. But the same with John McGinn, a lot of them are against the weaker nations, but that's probably speaks the example that you're giving there, Craig Anderson, is that he in those games, he's playing pretty much as an orthodox striker. But then when we're playing the bigger teams, then McGinn tracks back a lot. He supports, he uses his energy. He's more of a pressing player, but he has to get involved in the game a lot more because we can't afford to have anyone just concentrating on trying to get into sort of non-stop goal scoring positions. So again, just the beauty of John McGinn in general, it's a Swiss Army knife of a footballer. And he's maybe not the easiest on the eye playing in an attacking position in terms of it's not going to be all the slide drill passes. And I'm not saying he's poor at that, but he's just not like a classic number 10 or anything you would think of. And probably why you never see him in the English Premier League, because nearly every team will have those types of players to play in the forward lines because they're the most traditional ones you would go and buy if you're a top player. But for Scotland, it's just that means we've got sort of a chameleon just for whatever role we need him to be able to do on a given day. He's got absolutely no problem in doing it and actioning it for us. Right, anything else anyone want to talk about this game? Is there anyone other players that you were impressed with, or
Angus Gunn played?
Ah, yeah, might as well. I mean, talking about John McGinn, not getting involved too much. Wow.
The cameraman for it won't be for Viaplay. It'll be or even Sunset and Vine, I'd imagine. It'll be like it'll be part of like the World Feed or something. But the cameraman like going up and down, they're doing the national anthems before the game. He really hovered on Angus Gunn. And got very close to his face as well. The cameraman really wanted to know, or thought that the Scottish people should really know whether Angus Gunn knows the words to the national anthem or not. And fair play to Gunny, he did know the words.
I think
Tierney looked like he was in a coma beside
him. Yeah, I think Tierney always just keeps his mouth shut. Typical ex-Celtic player.
But the thing with Gunn is I think it's different to see like some of the players that you don't know for sure that they had that much connection to Scotland full stop before they started to play for us, in the sense that it could be like a Scottish parent or a Scottish grandparent or whatever, but it's like Angus Gunn's dad's played for Scotland. I think he's probably going to have like at least grown up with some awareness of the Flower of Scotland and all the rest of it. It's not like, you know, you could imagine some of the players who've played for us in the past have had like, and some of the most committed even players like have had like, I didn't even know my gran was Scottish until I found it. Do you know what I mean? Like that kind of level.
Brian Gunn's actually Scottish as well. It's not like Neil Sullivan's laddies, you know, growing up to play for Scotland.
So it's we don't really know. There was nothing to judge him on. To be honest, I think we could have had even Liam Kelly in the team there, and we probably kept a clean sheet. But
he would have spilled at least one of those shorts right at him, though.
Possibly.
Those paper wrists. But it was a good game. It was a really good game. Firstly, for us to start this group, because this group's a lot more difficult than maybe what you would have thought it was maybe even 2 years ago. That you know that there's a lot of banana skins. There's a lot of top. We're basically talking about every game we're going to play outside of the Cyprus game is going to be with some of the best attacking players on the planet are going to be involved in the game. Doesn't necessarily mean all the team's brilliant, but that is something we are going to have to deal with. So I think it was good from the fact we've not played a game in 6 months, a competitive game, that it's a game like this that we can sort of bed ourselves into. And then with us having this, the goalkeeping issue with the Craig Gordon injury, whoever we were playing was going to be making their debut. And I don't care who you are. I mean, Gunn even admits it. In the post match, and he says, "I didn't sleep very well last night." And like most people, before they make huge moments in any professional life, all of us. I mean, Craig Anderson, the first time you had to go and deliver a lecture, for example, first you're going to be anxious about it. You know, make further first time before you go on television, you're anxious about it. It doesn't act. I don't care who you are when you're making these huge sort of steps in your professional life. No matter how cool or calm or how ready you are. You are going to be anxious about it. So I think it was good for us that whoever was going to be in goals was probably going to get an easy day, and he was just going to be able to bend himself in, get a few catches, kick the ball out a bit. And to be fair to Angus Gunn, he looked like he really enjoyed it in that post-match. I mean, he couldn't keep the smile off his face, and I probably did want to play for England. But his dad is Scottish, and other parts of his family are Scottish. You'll know he said his whole family there, they are proud. So it's a big moment for him. Professionally and for his family, so I don't think there's any doubt that he's bang into it, and hopefully he's going to bring us a huge performance on Wednesday night when we play Spain, lads. So he's going to be very busy. I don't care. Like, I think we're good. I think we're good enough to give Spain a game, but the goalkeeper will be busy. It's as simple as that. I was having a little peek at the Spain team. I mean, we are all very much Scottish football fans. So this is probably where our podcast maybe falls down, is when it comes to these bits where we have to talk about the opponents that play for Scotland, because we're dweebs. We just pretty much watch that and maybe a bit of English football. Or if a Scottish player's playing in Italy, we'll watch that. Like our knowledge outside of that. But Spain went and beat Norway 3-0 there. But from all accounts, it wasn't much of a 3-0 game. I mean, where do you see us? Where's our chances lie in this Craig Anderson?
Well, first of all, like if we talked about it maybe a year or so ago, the kind of memorable game, the 3-2 game against Spain at Hampden, what was it, 2008 or something like that? It was a while ago.
That
Spain team was terrifying. Like, you looked at the names on it, you know, both, I mean, Xavi and Iniesta to start with, but they had, you know, Piqué was playing, he scored for us, and we had Busquets, they had, I think Casillas was still in goals, they had players that were hurting you from all over the pitch. I think Ramos was playing, I think David Villa was playing, potentially Torres as well, but they had the whole plethora of those players. The current Spain squad is a bit of a mishmash. Like, they've got some incredibly promising youngsters, guys who seem like they're going to be amongst the best players. Now, fortunately for us, Pedri, one of them's out injured. But they have Gavi, who is kind of 18, already got 18 caps for Spain because he is just clearly one of these, they're the kind of next Xavi and Iniesta pair. But in amongst that, you've got like players in their 30s that are kind of on the double figure caps, like Bailey, like Aspas, he's all right. We're talking about this relatively. These players would all get into our team. Let's not escape someone like Aspas, he's not a top level player. He's not an elite level player. He's a good player. He's more on a par with the types of players that might be produced by Scotland. And then they had like Joselu, who came on for his debut at the age of 33. And these are like mid-table.
Scored a double though.
He did score a double. Very much in the same circumstances as Scott McTominay though, with a team chasing the game. But these are like mid-table La Liga players rather than the whole squad coming from like Barcelona and Real Madrid with maybe a couple from
Man City or something.
There's things to like. I watched them play Morocco at the World Cup. I thought they were, and there's a few changes even since then, I thought they were better than Morocco. They deserved to win that game, but they also did what Spain have done at major tournaments for like the last four, which is just not have a cutting edge. And we, if there's one thing I think we can be good at, it is frustrating teams. And I'm hoping that we get kind of more of the same from them, and that maybe we just completely nullify them, just like they, you know, let them have the ball. They'll have a lot of the ball, and that they maybe, unlike in the past, don't quite have the magic to take us apart the way that, you know, you could have done that to, you've done that to that other team, and they still find a way to score, and maybe they don't this time. And I also think our energy at the top end of the park, if we pick it, can be big.
Yeah, you're thinking it's almost out of all the really top teams, this is all going to end up egg on my face when we get beat 3-0. Like, nothing. I mean, like, I'm very much well aware of this, that with handpicking a top team to come to Hampden, I'm probably picking a Spain team because for all the reasons you said there, and especially with you called it earlier on, we are disruptive rather than creative. So we win the ball in good areas, and then we have a player like Andy Robertson, who's like, in terms of delivery, it's obviously one of the top, but some of the best on the entire planet, as you see at every level in England and the Champions League. So we win the ball there, and then Robertson's already right up there. You've got that with Tierney in there, and then we have other players who, yeah, maybe it isn't at quite at that level, but Christie, Armstrong, Hickey, Patterson. I mean, these are guys that are all able to put good deliveries, and you can be confident of that if you go and win it. And obviously John McGinn, just pressure. So you're everything that would feed into our sort of strengths is what Spain will want to do. They're never going to just clear it. They're always going to pass the ball for the back religiously at all times. And that's probably, I think Luis Enrique tried to come away from that a bit, I think, because Luis Enrique didn't really do that when he was Barcelona manager. He turned them into quite a direct team. And I don't mean that in a not long ball here, but I mean when they had the Messi, Suarez and Neymar, they used to get the ball forward to them as a trio, and they went on, they won the treble under Enrique. But in Spain, it's just, it's like sort of DNA stuff. There's no getting away. They will all play that way. They're all brought up through their youth ranks to play with the ball at their feet and to have masses amount of possession. And if we win the ball high up the park, we've got a chance to score. that. So I think we will have chances and moments that we just need to be sort of taken advantage of. And I don't know, like, I mean, we're going to be, who are they going to be playing? It's Laporte and Nacho up there. They're going to be going up against the type of striker they barely ever go up against, I'm assuming. I mean, Laporte plays in England, so that's maybe a bit unfair, but I mean, they can't think that there's many Lyndon Dyke style players playing in La Liga. I mean, I'm happy to be proven wrong on that, but it doesn't strike me as a type of thing.
There's not many Lyndon Dyke type players in world football. That's why he's important to Scotland. It's not, there's no getting away from the fact that if you watch Lyndon Dyke's playing, we saw plenty of them playing up here. as a footballer, he's terrible. Like, he's his control's bad. His link-up can be all right, but as a, I mean, it's attitude first and foremost, but as a physical player, and you saw that, it's all the weird stuff, I think you talked about it, the knockdown for McTominay, it's like all that weird, awkward stuff.
Yeah.
It just makes him, yeah, you know you're in a game against him, and yes, most likely either or both of those two will pocket him, but you do think you could get one of those afternoons, like he used to, him or
Celtic.
Yeah, he would give Celtic, but they just like don't have an answer. And you just keep doing the same thing over and over again, and they just do not have a fucking clue how to deal with it. That's your best hope. That yes.
Do you think that maybe in this, say, rather than Shea Adams, because obviously Shea Adams going off is a big loss to Scotland, because I mean for Scotland in loads of games, his main attribute is the fact that he's got a bit of pace, so he can go in behind, but his first touch is like top rate. Shea Adams and playing ways back to goal, he's really really good at it. But is maybe having the left field number here? I mean, I'm just trying to convince myself the left field number here. Is that maybe the good thing here?
I would definitely rather have Adams in the team.
Yeah.
And I think as well, this type of game, I think we will miss Adams and miss that ability to just be a good player, just be a good footballer.
Hold the ball up there.
Aye, hold the ball up, link with midfielders, help us get up the park, make those intelligent runs through the channels and whatnot. And also as well, it could take away our ability to introduce Stipes as that X factor.
Mm.
Like defenders who've already played for 70 minutes and maybe been given the run around by another forward, and then what's this coming off the bench? Jesus Christ, who's this guy? Why are these limbs moving in all different directions at one time? What's going on? I'm really not ready to deal with this. Whereas as a defender, you might feel that in the opening 5-10 minutes, but then you just kind of get used to it as the game goes on. Yeah. So I don't know, it'd be interesting. I just don't know. I don't know anything about Jacob Brown. That's the only thing. I have no idea what Jacob Brown does or is or anything.
And I don't want to.
Yeah, because I don't know. Because I'm almost like advocating for maybe Dyke should just come off the bench, but then it's like we've just got so little else. Like, we have no idea. What is Jacob Brown? I don't know.
I think he's meant to be quick, but we've not seen him. And Shankland, who's been brought in, is not...
No.
I could have seen Lauren Shankland do something against Cyprus, but yeah, he's not.
He'll get eaten alive.
He's got none of the necessary attributes that would make him do anything against Spain. Like, he's not like better than them at any individual thing. Whereas Dykes has at least got his physicals, and Adams is just generally quite a top level player. I do think though, if you're picking, if this is an entirely fictitious choice that I'm giving you, if you're saying that Adams and Dykes, one of them has to play at home to Spain and one of them has to play away to Spain, Dykes is very much your Hampden Park, raucous atmosphere player, and Adams is very much your composed, try to play for a 0-0 draw in whatever Spanish city player. So there's that aspect of it that Dykes, I mean, he could get himself sent off in 10 minutes very easily, but if...
We're definitely going to see Jacob Brown or Lauren Shankland starting up front by themselves for Scotland in this game, because Dykes will definitely get booked and he will have to be withdrawn at some point so he doesn't get sent off.
Either that or it will be like McTominay or Christie or something, just like shuttling about in the final third.
It'll be Christie. I'll stick Christie up top by his own.
They'll get that McTominay will have played through the entire spine of the Scotland team at some point, please. in his career, is there any other changes you made? Jim Christie played himself into a start in this game.
I would like to see about six different midfielders start this game, so I'm finding it challenging to know who is going to play.
I think Christie will start instead of Armstrong, and I think it'll be harsh on Armstrong, who I thought was one of our better players on Saturday, but you can't drop him again. And I think Christie's...
I think you want a bit of freshness for this game. There's going to be a lot of running.
More just Christie's pressing ability will just be too much of a potential strength to leave out for me. So, yeah, it will be harsh on Armstrong, but that's probably the only changes I would make, to be honest.
But what about McTominay? Where does that leave him?
It leaves him on the bench, coming off the bench.
I just think I think McTominay should be playing this game. I think it's a game for him, but I also think McGinn obviously has to play, and I also think McGregor and Jack as a pair is exactly what we need to shield the defence. And I also think both Armstrong and Christie have got the right. So I'm like, oh, I've
good idea, Craig. What we should do is play 15 players.
Yeah, and then I picked the entire squad at this point. So
surely we'll win.
15 players, yeah. Scotland nil, Spain one.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to know where he goes, but it's
because you'd even like even though obviously Gilmore's not played a lot recently and has been out of the team. Even in, and I mean that in a Scotland sense as well. I mean, you reminded me when we were talking online, just about like even in the last triple header, Gilmore barely got a sniff over the three games. A bit like in a game like this, just like when you look at Wims a lot, the other big teams we've played, the England and the Euros, Gilmore play away from home, and Gilmore played man of the match performance because you're able to keep the ball and he can take the ball in tight areas. There'd be an argument in a game like this against Spain that those attributes would be massively helpful to have. And again, it's they're not bad problems, are they? I mean, the fact that you're the reason you're struggling to pick a team is because you're trying to work in all these sort of different attributes that they've got.
I think it's a good sign in the sense that, I mean, every football team is going to have irreplaceable players as such, and probably you're looking at Tierney, Robertson and McGinn for that, like players that you just don't have anyone else who can do what they do. But every other player on that park, you're kind of like, for example, if they're injured, you can kind of change it without really missing a beat. And that's, I mean, maybe that's unfair on Adams because you will see the difference up front, but there's at least other options there.
So an option you're not unhappy about anyway.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, even like Robertson, Greg Taylor is not Andy Robertson, but there's at least like a direct, pretty much like for like positional change there. So you are, and I know he's not in the squad, but I mean like, theoretically. So we're getting to this position where we have a larger and larger pool of players who we can call upon, because you've got, as I say, you've got two regular Serie A starters that we've not mentioned there. You know, Ferguson's in the squad, would again be another player whose physical attributes are ideal for a game like
this.
And
the fact that he can sniff out a goal as well.
And you've got someone like Doig who's playing every week in the Serie A that's can't even get a game, and even if one of the fullbacks got injured, still wouldn't be in the squad. So you're really looking at proper depth.
You could even see them moving Hickey over.
Well, yeah.
before they done that, and then Tierney, there'd be Tierney, then Hickey, and then you thought then maybe Doig would get a run.
So it's that in itself is a good sign, and it's a centre half problem as well. All of a sudden, Jack Hendry out, and I think that's a massive blow. I think it still is a massive blow for this game in particular because he is the, of all our players, he has the most balls in terms of just getting in possession and doesn't care who he's playing against and dribbling. Yeah. And his passing's not very good. Don't get away from it, but he likes to pass the ball. I think he would have been a real asset in this game because I think he's very quick as well, quicker than people think he is. So he would be good on the cover and stuff like that. So but at the same time, you've got someone like Portis who can step into that role, and
he has similar, well, like in terms of that, in terms of the attitude, he that's the similar sort of he. But I don't think Portis will be scared to get on the ball. I don't think he'll be scared to make a pass if he thinks it's the right thing to do. But I've always thought that Portis does. You don't see it a lot because it was when he was at Hibs, even when Hibs aren't very good. Teams still let Hibs have the ball. If you like, I mean, you know what I mean. Just Easter own stuff, just naturally, obviously, because Hibs are quote unquote a bigger club than a lot of them. They just let them have it, and that's a bad thing for Hibs. A lot of time, the teams are doing that deliberately because again, so but Poaches can definitely play backs to the wall. He likes to defend deep
in the Ukraine game,
and then, so I think I'm not worried about Portis in this game and the style of player that he is, and I think he'll play in there. And then we're going to have what is it? Morata as the captain now? Is that right?
Yeah,
seems weird, but
he is a much better player than people think he is.
Absolutely, yeah, of course. You don't get passed around basically all the biggest clubs in Europe. Just for a laugh, but
his CV is Real Madrid, Juventus, Chelsea, and Atletico Madrid. Ah, he's shite.
But he'll be going up. But I mean, that'll be like the cart. People will be looking at this as like the cart horse challenge between Grant Hanley and Morata. So I mean, that'll be an interesting one to watch. I'm assuming he's not going to start Joselu, despite the fact that he came off the bench and scored those goals. I mean, Danny Olmo, he seems like a wild player again. I mean, we saw a bit of him in the World Cup where he's like really good dribbler, but
it's international football. You're not allowed to be good unless you have a player from either RB Leipzig or Atalanta, and that's where we're missing out. Those are the two clubs that produce the entirety of international football. So.
But I have to say, look at that team. It's obviously they're a lot better than us. They will see the ball, but I don't think it is an impossible task by any means. And if the right atmosphere, and boy, please, it's maybe a night time gives it a bit of edge for us. I mean, these things. I mean, maybe these things we just make up in our heads. Who knows? But you feel like you win more. Uh-huh. You get more shocks at night.
People taking half days to work. People getting pushed.
Aye,
more raucous atmosphere.
2-0 Scotland. I think we are going to win this game. I don't know why, but I've just got a real feeling that we are.
I passed up my ability to go. I could have a ticket this game. I'll let you take it, Tony. So that's why I'm confident that I'm going to miss out on an absolutely massive famous night because I didn't trust myself not to drink free alcohol the night before a view from the terrace record.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure if Jordan or Andy or anyone's listening to this podcast, I'm sure they're delighted with that.
Yeah, with that, like, he's growing up. We're all on season 5.
But yeah, I've taken a ticket, but there'd be the opposite is that all the best things happen when I don't go to Hampden, like humping Rangers 3-0, winning the Scottish Cups. So who knows? But I'm always there when we get beat 5-1 of Hearts and stuff like that. So.
He's that ticket back.
So we'll see how this one's coming. I'm going with Ewan and because Children First were kind enough to give us tickets for the charity show that we all done, and we'll be in the business class and getting to watch Craig Telford do his thing on stage, which I'm looking forward to.
You should point out that it's not coming out of the money that we raised for
them. To be clear, like, I think Children First are like the national team's like ongoing partner for charitable work and sponsoring, hence why we were allowed to they don't just let us in Hampden because we needed to be verified, and it was Children First who verified us to let us go into the bowels of Hampden to do a show. So they'll always get tickets for these events, and they offered us a couple to say thank you, which was really kind of them, and I'm really looking forward to it. But with Craig Anderson saying we're going to win, I don't think of any place to finish better than there. So thank you very much for listening, and thank you guys for joining me. And we are nipping over to Patreon on the £2 tier. So put your money in there if you want to hear us talk about what's going on at the Scotland under 21s? Why do we not win any matches ever, even though some of the players are good and we're playing absolute rubbish teams? But so we're going to try and talk that through, and we think you should join us. So come on over, and thanks again for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota #4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.